Hello, this is Denise Lee Yan, and welcome to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. The Brand as Business Bites podcast features great stuff for your brain to chew on, including insights and interviews with newsmakers, brand builders, and thought leaders. It's available on iTunes and on my website, DeniseLeeYan.com.
I first connected with today's guest many years ago when he wrote and published a great book called Business Relationships That Last. His name is Ed Wallace. He's president and chief relationship officer of the Relational Capital Group, a consulting firm that brings expertise in leadership, sales, account management, and customer service to clients around the world. Ed's new book, called The Relationship Engine, Connecting with the People Who Power Your Business Relationships, hit number one on Amazon as a bestseller in October and is a must-read for anyone whose success relies on working with other people, and that's pretty much everyone. So I've asked Ed to join me today to talk about his book, so welcome, Ed.
Thank you, Denise. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners today.
Great. Well, I want to jump right into your book again, The Relationship Engine, because there are a lot of ideas and terms that people need to understand. So I'm just kind of going to go through a few of them. Let's start with the term relational leader. What is a relational leader, and why is being one important?
Well, a relational leader, Denise, can be anybody. And you are truly a relational leader, and I'm not saying that because you're having me on your broadcast here. I've known you for many years, and the key thing about a relational leader is they put the other person or the other person's goals ahead of their own, and they create what I call an environment where their success comes through the success of others. So anybody can be a relational leader. You don't need to be an executive in a company. You don't need to be a high potential in a company. In the relationship engine, I give examples of very common roles in life, like toll takers and people who run animal shelters, as well as corporate executives and salespeople, all kinds of different people. And I believe I'm talking to a true relational leader right now.
Oh, well, thank you. I didn't set you up for that, but thanks for saying so. I appreciate it. Now, you talk about how relational leaders, one of the most distinguishing characteristics is that they display worthy intent. In fact, your whole leadership model is based on worthy intent. What is that?
Well, you know, when we were working with our publisher, Amacom, on the title for the book is focused on worthy intent. And it's really, there's five principles. The first principle of relational leadership is to display worthy intent. Now, the definition of worthy intent is to put the other person's goals ahead of your own. And we're not suggesting to our readers that they don't do that. I believe, I go into every business relationship that the people I'm working with are putting others first and their goals first. They're in service to those goals. The key with worthy intent is not worthy intent, it's displaying worthy intent. And that happens based on the reaction you get from the person you're working with. So, for instance, I can have all the best intentions in the world to work on a project with you, Denise. But if I don't get the response back from you that indicates that you acknowledge that I'm the right person to work with and that, you know, I can actually help you accomplish your goals, then I can have all the best intentions in the world. It all depends on the response you get from the other person. And the relationship engine is worthy intent. And I have a great quote from Chris Malone in the book. Chris does an awful lot of research with Dr. Susan Fiske from Princeton University on warmth and competence of brands and warmth and competence of people in business. And one of the quotes Chris provided, or observations he provided in the book, that every year or every day a new leadership model comes out, or a new way of doing things in business when it comes to leadership. And his comment was, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, is that none of that works without the ability to display worthy intent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm actually a big fan of Chris Malone's. He wrote that book, The Human Brand, where he explains the model of warmth and confidence. And so I was just so thrilled to see you drawing upon that in your own book. So I guess we'll let Chris know that we're both fans of his, right?
We can do that, yes.
Yes. Okay, so now one other thing that you talk about is relational superiority complex. What is it, and why do most people have a relational superiority complex?
This one really winds me up, Denise. So I may speak longer than you intended for me here. But a relational superiority complex is the tendency to believe our relationships are better than they are. And there's an awful lot of data that supports that. There was a recent study of senior executives across Fortune 500 companies, across all functional groups in the Fortune 500 companies they're in, and they asked, what's the secret to your success for yourself and your team every year? Almost 90% said their ability to build great relationships. The survey went on to ask those executives, well, what do you do about that? And only 24% said they actually do anything intentionally. This book is all about intentionality. When it comes to relationships, in other words, thinking about relationships in terms of principles and a process, which is what the relationship engine is all about, which is what we generally do anyway, but I just wrote it down for everybody. It helped everybody remind everybody about it. And then the most compelling piece of research that came from that study that led me to come up with the phrase relational superiority complex is, on average, our best business relationships. So if you or your listeners get the face of the person who they believe they have the best business relationship in their mind, mm-hmm. that relationship is only working at 45% of its potential.
Wow.
Look at it. Our best ones are only working at half of their potential. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. I have too many, so I can't really focus on the best ones. Which are the right ones? How do I prioritize them? How do I measure the strength of those relationships? Relationships take too much time. I don't have enough time. Yet, at the end of the day, the most important thing, according to the survey, is relationships. So that's where I kind of came up with this idea of we tend to think they're better than they are until we actually start thinking about them intentionally. We try measuring them. Like, oh, you know, I probably could get a lot more out of this relationship, and I can help them a lot more as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that really leads to something that resonated with me that most people, and I would put myself in this category, kind of think that relationships are important but don't have a process for making them and making them valuable. So I think that's part of the superiority complex is if we think that they're better than they are, then we don't think that we need to work at them very much. But I think that, you know, your book really kind of called us out and said, you know what, they probably aren't as good as you think they are, and you need to be intentional about developing them. So, that's why I got so much value out of your book. Let me ask you about one last term, relational GPS. What is it? How do you use it?
Okay, so let's say we want to overcome our relational superiority complex. We can tie it right to that concept. Just like a GPS system is the roadmap for our travel success, relational GPS is a very simple yet powerful concept when it comes to our relational or relationship success. Relational GPS stands for, the G stands for business and or personal goals. The P is passions, causes, things people care deeply about. And the S is for struggles, business or personal. What human being doesn't have struggles? And we believe that if you can really capture the goals, passions, and struggles of the person you're working on a project with, or you're trying to influence to buy your product or service, or even in a personal relationship, the more GPS you know and understand, the better chance you have to create trust. And the more trust you create, the faster the relationship can evolve. And the faster the relationship evolves, the sooner you start doing some things together. So when we think, I would, if this were a workshop or a training program that we are doing, I would ask the folks in the class, I'd say, hey, write down your top three business relationships or the three that you think are your top three. Now, in terms of GPS, what do you really know about that person that they've shared with you firsthand? And you would be very surprised, Denise, at how little of that very simple information we know. So that's kind of the genesis of where relational superiority complex comes from, the research and the fact that, hey, this person I've been working with for 3 years, I don't even know anything about what their real business goals are. I just know that we do this project together once a year. Mm-hmm. So that's where, and of all the concepts in the book, relational GPS is universal because it goes across generations. Everybody's saying, I don't know how to work with millennials. Or millennials say, I don't know how to work with gens or baby boomers. Well, guess what? All three groups, and I know I'm broadly categorizing all of us. I know there's even more groups within those, but ultimately there's three groups. And everybody's got GPS. So if we can just approach a millennial, or if we can get a boomer to approach a millennial or vice versa, trying to understand goals, passions, and struggles, the better chance we have to cross that that diversity chasm that exists out there.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about concepts and terms, but what I liked about your book, again, it's called The Relationship Engine, is that it went beyond concepts and strategies and provided actual blueprints for putting them into action. And one way that you explain to do this is to classify each of your relationships into one of three relationship types that I believe you say they're either colleagues, professional peers, or advocates. So would you please explain kind of each and how they differ? And, you know, recognize we don't have a lot of time, but I'd love if you could maybe perhaps give an example of how you might engage in each type of relationship differently depending on whether they are colleague, professional peer, or advocate.
Sure, Denise, how much time do you have? No, just kidding. I can do that. Well, when we think about relationships in terms of a process, in the relationship engine, we've innovated a process called the relational agility process. And to be relationally agile starts with thinking, okay, about my goals. So let's say I've got three goals. And the first goal is I am a team leader, and I need to transition team leadership to a new person who I don't really have much of a business relationship with. This will probably be the only time. Let's say you're that team leader, Denise. And in this scenario, we're a large corporation. I'm going to make this transition over a 2 or 3 month period, and we may see each other around the hallways again. We're probably not going to work on a project together again for a very long time. A relational leader applies the principles of the relationship engine. But the first thing they think about is, okay, based on this goal of transferring team leadership, I only really need to be a colleague with Denise. To try to invest a lot of time to become an advocate, which we haven't defined yet, for this goal. So everything spins off of the goal. And a colleague relationship, we are going to learn each other's GPS. We're going to make sure that we understand GPS and that we value time. They're the two principles. We make every interaction matter when we're together, and we create an action plan for our relationship and the accomplishment of the goal, and then we get done. So strategically, I made a decision that colleague level or colleague dimension is all I really need here. That's not to say that colleague is at the bottom of the matrix. It's just for this particular goal, we only need to be colleagues. Now, let's say you and I we've been colleagues for a while, and guess what? From that project, we got put on a bigger project. So now we're going to do something like integrate a product from a joint venture. And it's a 6 to 9 month project. It's a diverse team we have to lead. You're a millennial. I'm a boomer. I'm just making this up, Denise. But we need a stronger relationship based on this goal. And that's where, you know, I decide, you know what, I think I need, and you would be taking the same program. So, yeah, peer-level relationship is fine here. Professional peers, there's no hierarchy. Let's say maybe you're a director and I'm a supervisor, or I'm not at your level in the organization. That doesn't mean we can't be peers and behave like peers on this important project. So that's where professional peer, again, we're making a conscious decision. And what professional peers do is they work GPS, they make every interaction matter, the first two principles, and they apply the third principle, which is valuing people before processes. So you and I are very concerned about not creating processes that are going to create a lot of problems for the people that have to implement this project. We're going to think about the people and the relationships first, and then we're going to draw the boxes and everything. A lot of times the boxes get drawn, and we don't really think between the boxes. That's where the relationships are. We just create fine lines, strict lines, and things don't happen that way with human beings. And then, and last one, and I know I told you I was going to, you opened up a Pandora's box here. let's say now that you and I have been peers for a while. We did a great job on that project. We even have a personal relationship now. We're friends around the office. We know about each other's families, whatever that entails, right? Mm-hmm. Now I need $1 million, unbudgeted, and you've risen to being a board member. Now I need an advocate-type relationship with you where you're going to help me get that $1 million unbudgeted. And we're gonna do that not only by applying those other principles that I just mentioned, but we're now going to apply the fifth principle, which is connecting performance to a purpose. And how, and I'm finding so many, I travel around so many companies that everybody wants to have meaning in everything they do today. And I think that's so powerful. And we can connect this, what this $1 million on budget is going to do to change something around the company or help a customer, whatever that is. That's the way you and I are going to think about that. And I've got to elevate my relationship in this case to where we are advocates with each other. And you're advocating for me to get what I need on the board, and I'm advocating internally so we can accomplish it. So those are the three dimensions. And again, one is not better than the other. It's just strategically, based on the enormity of the goal, what type of relationship we need. And that all filters through to the teams that are supporting us, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you kind of going through that very quickly and highlighting my listeners and my readers just a sample of the framework and the process that you go through in developing relationships. So we'll kind of leave it at that. But I do want to make sure that we talk about the RQ assessment that you invite people to take at the end of the book. What is the RQ assessment? How did you create it? And what are we going to learn by taking it?
Well, many years ago when we were developing these concepts, the idea of measuring relationships seemed to be out of reach. So we worked with the master's degree people at Villanova University. Dr. David Bush is the endowed chair there, and now he's the chair emeritus. Brilliant, brilliant guy. And he came up with 35 behaviors that human beings exhibit when they work together in business. And these behaviors do not require a degree in psychology. Denise either calls me back or she doesn't. Denise either responds to my correspondence or she does not. Denise either gives me extra meeting time or she does not. So the RQ assessment takes these behaviors. We've created a weighted algorithm underneath all that scientific stuff. And we've assessed about 35,000 relationships now over the last 8 or 9 years. So it's pretty solid, and we've done it all around the world. It works in every – it seems like it works in just about every country. And if you think about your goals – and you assign 5 people or 10 people, however many people you want, it's usually best with 5, it's easier, to those goals, and then you answer questions about those relationships. It takes about 15 minutes, and it comes back with a report that talks about where this person is, colleague, advocate, peer, what you can do to sustain the relationship there, almost like a DISC report that comes back, how to create an action plan for that relationship and a strategy, where to capture GPS, et cetera. And it gives you a score. I forgot about the score. You're going to get an RQ score that goes against all the RQ scores we've done over the years, and it kind of tells you where you stand relationally with those 5 relationships. And if anybody wants to take an RQ assessment, they can – I forgot to offer this. They can. It's free. They can go out to relationalcapitalgroup.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, it'll say – try a free RQ assessment, and you just log in. We send you a code, and a salesperson will not call, so don't worry about that.
Well, great, and what an added value to already a great book to be able to have that tool also. So tell my listeners more about how they can learn about more about you and your book. I'm assuming going to relationalcapital.com is a good place to start.
Sure. We do everything from I do a lot of keynote speeches, as you know, Denise. all the way through, you know, half-day workshops. We've got a full line of programs on how to launch, advance, and sustain your most important relationships, whether you're in sales or leadership. Our website, as I mentioned, is relationalcapitalgroup.com. You can get the book, and it's in Barnes & Noble right now. I don't know how long it'll be in there, but you can get it on all the websites. CEO Reads, you can get them for a discount on 800 CEO Reads if you're going to buy more than five. And I can be reached on the website. You can find my email address on there. And there's a contact form, so you can reach out to us any way you'd like.
Terrific. Well, I do encourage my listeners and readers to check out the book, The Relationship Engine, Connecting with the People Who Power Your Business Relationships. I recommend you check out the RQ assessment and check out Ed and his talks and his workshops. So many great resources that are available. Ed, best wishes with the rest of your book launch so far. It seems like it's gotten off to a great start, and so congratulations and thanks for being with me today.
You're welcome, Denise. Great to be with you as always.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes or through my website, DeniseLeeYon.com. And check out my new best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, The 7 Brand Building Principles That Separate the Best from the Rest. Go to WhatGreatBrandsDo.com. And remember, good is the enemy of great. Greatness is a choice. Choose to be great.